Today we speak with Cody Davis. He's only 21, but already owns 30 apartment units. Starting with less than $3,000, he's managed to buy millions of dollars worth of real estate. We dive into exactly how he did this, how he structures his deals, and also discuss tips and tricks for anyone else looking to get into real estate. This episode is packed with a ton of valuable content, so stick around.
You're listening to the Next Generation Podcast,
weekly interviews with the most interesting and successful 20-somethings out there. All right. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Cody. We are excited to have you on, and we have a lot of questions to run through and some awesome real estate to discuss. But before we get into that, I'd love like a quick 30, 40 second pitch on who you are, what you've done, and the things you're up to.
Sounds like a plan. So my name's Cody. I'm 21-year-old Pacific Northwest, just south of Seattle in Tacoma, Washington. I have acquired 30 apartment units, a mix of two 12-plexes and a 6-plex over the past year and a half, starting with just $3,000, no rich uncle, no family tied to real estate. And now I am connecting with you guys to go to the next level.
That's awesome. So that's for anyone listening who's not involved in real estate right now, like Cody's 21, you're 21, right? Not 22 at this point.
Right.
For anyone listening, like that's absolutely absurd. The fact that in the past year and a half, he's acquired 30 different units is a huge feat in and of its own. And so today we're basically going to go and break down how Cody did it, why he did it, what his plans are for the future, all that kind of stuff. So to kind of go ahead and get things started, I would love to know, Cody, like before going into real estate, last time when we spoke on the phone, you actually wanted to be a chiropractor, if I remember correctly.
Yep. So I had made my deposit at University of Puget Sound here in Tacoma, and I was getting ready for a 7-year gig at school to try and become a chiropractor. And the debt behind that was pretty astronomical as well. They're about $65,000 a year for the first 4 years. And so it was pretty expensive. And then I was like, okay, well, this is what I want to do, but I don't really want the debt. And so I decided to go to community college for business. And 2 quarters into that, I tanked that idea and jumped into real estate.
What was that actual transition like? I'm assuming you must have been in class at some point and you know, realized it's not worth it or it's not something you want to be doing. And then I feel like usually though, that transition to real estate tends to come from, you know, friends and family that recommend it, but right, you kind of did it all on your own. How did that happen?
Well, I don't claim to do anything on my own. I have a lot of help from folks, but it's not from the typical folks that people expect. It wasn't from family. It was from some random guy on Facebook. And I'm glad I took the offer. But basically, I put a post out online. It was in a Facebook real estate group. And basically, I just said, I'm working a few different jobs. I'm going to college. And I would like to buy a duplex at age 21. And that's all I put out there. And I asked for tips and tricks. And someone said, well, instead of the whole retail route, which is where I was kind of going for my jobs, why don't you come join the real estate brokerage and check us out? You learn about real estate and make some money in the process. And that's what I did.
And then how far after joining that did you end up buying your apartment? Because I still can't really get over that you're 21 and you already have so many units. I don't think we've met anyone yet that's managed to close and kind of run this quickly with it. So you joined this brokerage firm. What did that initial phase look like?
So yeah, it was 9 months from start to finish. I got licensed, and within 9 months I owned my first 12-plex.
Were you diving into like any books, or you were mostly utilizing your network at the firm on how to analyze deals, right? Most people don't even know what cap rates are or how loans work and amortizing that. Was this stuff you knew beforehand, or how did you kind of get?
No, I had to learn it, and I learned it from the firm, from Blackwell. And people get caught up on things that don't really matter, and it gets them stuck. Like cap rates, when you're starting out, don't matter. You don't need to know why a cap rate's important to be able to find a good deal. It's a non-important metric in the way that I view real estate. Yes, you need to get a cap rate. You need to understand why it makes sense. Because if you buy in a 6% cap rate and you borrow money at 6%, you're losing money still. Not just from inflation, because people forget about the principal, like the debt reduction piece of it. And so it's not one for one, but that stuff doesn't matter in the beginning. Is my income higher than my expenses? That's it. And
For someone starting out today, like that's the only thing that you would focus on is what are your expenses? What is your income? Does your income surpass your expenses? Well, and if it does, you have a good deal?
I would say, why don't we take a step back quick? Maybe if you want to explain like what a cap rate is and why I even brought it up, and then like the metrics, like the ones that you tended to focus on for the deals.
Sure. So cap rate, if you're looking at a cash on cash return, if I invest 100 grand and I go buy a $500,000 piece of real estate, I am making returns on leverage because I'm borrowing $400,000. If the cap rate is higher, but at least high enough above the interest rate that you're borrowing money at, you make the spread. And that increases your cash on cash returns. Now, I'm going to throw out some names. If you don't know these people, you should. Grant Cardone is a leverage guy. He borrows a lot of money and he makes money on the spread. Dave Ramsey pays cash for everything, so he cares about cap rates. Cap rates are, if I pay cash, this is my cash on cash return. If I buy a $100,000 house in the Midwest, and at the end of the year, I put $12,000 in my pocket, it's a 12% cap rate. That's after all expenses, all right, other than a mortgage, because you don't have a mortgage when you pay cash. Now, probably not in a position, if you're listening to this and you're 20 years old, 21 years old, 19 or younger, you probably don't have $100,000 cash. I've met a few folks who do. I didn't. And so you really just need to figure out, before you jump into the numbers, what's your why? Why are you doing this? For me, I have that ingrained in my head, and it's what's pushing me so hard. But you need to understand why you're doing it, because this stuff isn't fun all the time. Nobody just jumps into real estate because it's fun in the beginning.
Right. Yeah. Like, I think the fun stuff that you see is like, you know, inventing the next Uber and Airbnb, or, you know, all of the more high tech stuff. Real estate at the core of it is probably a better way to go and actually generate a lot of long-term, really sustainable wealth. And actually, you know, that's something I kind of want to dive into as well, based on what we talked about last week. Was, you were saying like you have this long-term vision for yourself fully ingrained in your head. It's something that you've learned and you've repeated to yourself time and time again, right? And I think last time we spoke, correct me if I'm wrong here, your goal was 1,400 apartment units. Is that right?
Correct.
Right. You kind of like reverse engineered your life in terms of dollars, which I think is actually kind of a cool thing to do. But like, what exactly is your long-term goal?
Yeah, so I've got some family members that have health issues. And so like, I've got a sister with type 1 diabetes. I've got family that have had cancer and people that have died of ALS. And so I've got five different groups and organizations that I want to be able to donate $1 million to every single year. And that's not going to come out of earned income. It's going to come out of passive income. And the $1 million is just, it's random. I mean, it's made up, right? So it's just a number. It feels significant to me at this point, and it might grow, but that's what I'm working towards. And the math behind it was, I figured, okay, if I have 1,400 apartments, let's say almost $170 million worth of real estate, a 6% cap rate, I should have about a $10 million a year net portfolio if I can get that paid off by age 40, which is 19 years from now. Then I can live and give greater than I ever dreamed. So that's what's driving me right now, and what I keep in the back of my head when I'm doing all this stuff.
I love the concept of reverse engineering it, because right now you know exactly how many doors, you know your game plan, you know exactly how to do it. Now all you have to do is actually go out and execute it. But before we even get there, I kind of wanted to dive in on the point where you said not everyone has 100 grand in the bank in cash. How did you close and start this entire career without any money? Because again, that's definitely a very abnormal aspect. And I think you have some really interesting points on how you managed to complete those deals.
It's all about asking for help. The first deal I found, so I didn't qualify with banks. Imagine that. They didn't give a 19-year-old a $1 million loan. And so I got the seller to give me $1 million loan. And basically what the deal structure was, it found a 12-plex here in Washington, beautiful property, in brick buildings, close to Microsoft, close to all the schools and the churches and the grocery stores. And so it was an ideal location. And the owner owned it outright. They actually had bought it when they were in their 20s, which was helpful. But I had it under contract before they ever met me. I found a place that I absolutely loved. I called up the broker. This was on the market. And I just said, hey, love your guys' property. I'm a buyer in your location. I'm writing this up right now, but I just wanted to confirm what this offer needs to look like. Right? Because I wanted to write it up and I just wanted them to sign it. And because I did that, they had it signed within the day. I was under contract the following day. And then I was off to the races of figuring out, okay, what else do I need to know? The original structure was the seller was financing 85%, meaning I had to put 15% down. It was like $167,000, somewhere in there. And so I had to come up with that money. And turns out I didn't have that money, but I had to portray the confidence that I did and just started going down the road. I did have to pay for an inspection. It was a little bit of money out of pocket. I had a property inspector.
When you say actually going down the road, what does that mean? How do you find, did you just start calling up a bunch of people and then asking them for, you know, $100,000 plus? Because I think most people wouldn't really consider doing that. I don't think that's on a lot of people's radar that you can, you know, that's an option to just start hopping on the phone. Or was this a referral? Have you done both? What does that look like?
So my first deal, I just, when it came to raising the money, I just had a lot of help. I asked for folks, I was like, hey, do you know anybody who could be in a position to do this? And then they would come in, and this is the whiteboard I pitched it at. I'm at the Blackwell Mansion right now, the main office where I started learning everything. And I learned everything I know from this whiteboard. And so I'm at a table right now, and there's five other chairs. And so I had an investor sitting there, had his connection, who was the boss of the owner of the firm. And he just said, pitch away. And I botched that one, and I didn't get any money. And I went through that process, and I learned, and it was rough. And the owner of the firm was just like, well, good job. You did one. What's next? And he helped refine me. I had a lot of help, right? And so I went through the process, and eventually one of his investors funded the deal. And I bought it. I ended up negotiating it, though. I love the deal, and I don't need to negotiate the price when I have no money. That's just kind of an irrelevant, like it doesn't really matter as much as people think it does on good deals. And so I just got it down from 15% down to 10%. And I only had to come up with $112,000.
That's awesome. And so in terms of actually finding that property, did you go out? I remember when we spoke last time that you had a couple different interesting tactics of actually finding properties that you really enjoyed. Did you go out and necessarily just like cold call them, or did you go and find them just on the market, or how did you usually go and find your deals?
The first deal was on the market, and I picked the market a little bit randomly. I had a 22-unit apartment building written up for a client here in the office. It was over in Central Washington, and the buyer didn't move forward. He didn't have the funds. And the owner of the firm just said, hey, if you want to buy this, why don't we just assign it to you? I'll raise the money. And he'd make a pretty good fee in the middle. And then I would own it. And at the time, I mean, this was a crazy deal. It was ridiculous. The portfolio sold for $1,450,000. That was the purchase price at the time. And today, I want to say that same portfolio is probably worth 2.3. And I know that pretty confidently because I own over half of that portfolio today.
Right.
But that deal fell through and the seller would not give an extension I needed to close to get the money in. So that pretty much crushed me because I was going to go from $0 to $5,000 a month in net cash flow on a zero down deal. I mean, it was a unicorn. And right. When that fell apart, I was like, okay, well, this market's probably got something. It's got to have something. And I found a 12-plex on the market, had it under contract within the next day, and I bought it.
So to summarize that, it's definitely like just talking to as many people as possible, asking everyone, you know, do you know other people in the industry? Do you know where I can get money? And I love that. I think, you know, not enough people ask questions about, you know, introduce me to someone you know that might have real estate, et cetera. On that note, though, are you looking for specific properties that have, you know, X, Y, and Z criteria to go in and kind of execute your strategy? Is it just underperforming rent or ones that you're going to go in and rehab yourself?
Well, I don't have to rehab all my units. Some of them are actually pretty nice from day one. There's a property, my very first property I bought. I mean, it's beautifully landscaped, great location, very like nice flooring, nice cabinets. It's all hardwood. Like it's pretty decent. And as soon as someone would leave for $750, it would just re-rent for $950. And so not all of them need work. Some of them are just under-rented. But my main criteria is if I wouldn't live there, why would my tenant? So I'm not going to buy it. All right. And when I'm looking at it, I just need to be confident. I don't recall if I had the first deal under contract in 2 hours or the first day. That kind of is a wash right now. But I was confident enough talking to the broker to where they never had to meet me. And we got signed. So the main thing is like just be confident when you're looking at it. You're like, yeah, this is something I want to own. And this would be a great place for a family to live or for an elderly person to live if you're buying low-income housing. Some people build their portfolios off of that. You find your niche and then you buy for that for whatever your long-term goal is. But yeah, the main one is if I wouldn't live there, I don't own it.
Right. Yeah. I remember when we spoke last week, that makes a lot of sense. I think that you'll always find attractive deals in markets that are maybe a little bit not as nice as you would want to go to. And, you know, maybe you're buying it, hoping that it appreciates and, you know, they put a Starbucks down at the end of the street or a Lululemon store or something like that. But I think the strategy that you go in with is definitely pretty nice. The interesting thing is that now you're about three deals in at this point. So you've been able to go and see a couple different structures and be able to go and negotiate things a little bit differently from time to time. What have you learned recently from the last two deals or even the most recent one that you kind of wish that you had applied earlier on over a year and a half ago, 2 years ago when you were first getting started?
Well, looking back, there were things that I just couldn't have done from a confidence standpoint. But the very first deal, I needed a lot of help. The second deal, not so much. The third deal, I didn't use any help. It was all on me. From coming up with the money, negotiating the deal, getting the seller financing portion, managing the property. Like I oversaw all of it without extra help. So looking back on it, yeah, if I knew how to raise money back then and do it the right way, I would do it. For raising capital, like I'm not giving up ownership for that. It's just structured as a loan. It goes in second lien position. But I didn't know how to do that a year and a half ago. And so I couldn't have possibly bought it really by myself and been comfortable with that because it's like the law of the first deal. You get your first one, you learn a little bit, then you buy your second one, you learn a little bit more and it allows you to scale up quicker and quicker and quicker to the point where you don't need help if you don't want it.
In terms of resources that kind of convinced you to go on this path and, you know, start working on your own and building up a real estate portfolio, you mentioned Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Could you kind of jump into, you know, why that book was impactful for you and how that might have shifted your mindset?
Yeah, I mean, that was just the first introduction. I recommend everybody reads it at the very minimum and just get a second perspective or a third perspective. Perspective has been everything for me. When I'm going to meet with folks or read books, I'm not necessarily going for the knowledge. I am, because I'm a firm believer you should be learning every day. But at the same time, like I flew over to go meet Grant Cardone, but I wasn't really going for the knowledge. I got some out of it, but I just wanted the perspective, what it's like to view the world from a place where money doesn't really matter. It's important, but you have so much of it, you can't mess up. And the way that people look at life through that lens, like you can't mess up your money. That's why I would recommend reading the book, is because it gives you perspective from someone who's done that. It's like, oh, if you just buy things that pay you, you'll be better off in the future than you are today. And it's like, that's so simple. And I liked that.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I think for anyone who here doesn't know Grant Cardone, huge real estate guy across pretty much about every channel that you can be on these days, I got to say, I would love to know, like, you meeting with him. So you had a conversation with him, or was it like a book signing, or what was it?
Yeah. So I got to have a conversation with him, and you had to ask some one-on-one questions, and it was just, I mean, it was a good time. I was nervous at the time for sure. I mean, first time meeting him, I was like, whoa. But after chatting with him for just a few minutes, I calmed down. I was like, okay, logically, what's next step? And I got to run it by him, and he thought it was cool. But
so I'm curious, from a perspective side, like, how did he change your perspective on something? Or did you kind of like learn anything big just from meeting him that you didn't actually learn in some of his 10X or like YouTube channel books or things like that?
So the perspective I got, I watched him pitch to some people, and I tuned out the pitch, but I just watched what he did and how he presented it. I've gone through Cardone University a few times now, and it's his sales training platform, and he executed. And I know he's the man because he made it, but he executed it at the highest levels. He had these people in just a lull where they were giving in to everything he said, and his execution was just phenomenal. And that's why he's the top guy. But getting to hear it in person validates what I've heard online. It's not real until it is. And at that point, it became real.
That's awesome. So it sounds like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Grant Cardone, any other, like, I know the one that Gio and I send back and forth a good amount is like Bigger Pocket Stuff, tends to have pretty interesting like YouTube episodes or podcasts. Any other resources that, like, for someone who has done nothing today, I feel like most of my friends that I know that are in business or want to get into business usually try to start talking about real estate, saying like, that's something that I want to go and get into. Are there other resources that you can kind of point them to aside from just talking to a lot of people that says like, hey, this is actually, you know, a pretty interesting podcast that you can go and pick up on, or this book kind of shifted my perspective in terms of how I think about leverage and debt and all that kind of stuff?
I mean, I would look at Dave Ramsey. He's a complete opposite, but it's good perspective. The main thing though is like, get educated, but don't have too many mentors. If you listen to Grant Cardone religiously and you listen to Dave Ramsey religiously, you're not going to do anything. So look to them for knowledge, but don't idolize both, because they're completely different strategies.
Such a good point. My last manager told me that if you listen to all advice, at the end of the day, it all cancels out, no matter who you're listening to from. So he was telling me, like, you know, his two mentors that he looks up to are Russell Brunson, CEO of ClickFunnels, and Gary Vaynerchuk, right? Like, two big sales and marketing guys. They know how to talk the talk, walk the walk, and they do it on a daily basis. And at the end of the day, some of their stuff might be wrong, but if you listen to everyone, then that's the only surefire way to actually be wrong. So I definitely like that philosophy of kind of just having one or two mentors to focus in on and just steal all of their stuff, copy it all, like learn from them more specifically.
In terms of risk and kind of some of the things that can go wrong, you mentioned a couple interesting stories last week, I think, in terms of flooding. Maybe that'd be kind of interesting to hear about. And then in the beginning of this call as well, you mentioned some regulatory issues that have been cropping up as well.
Sure. Well, I won't jump into the regulatory issues over this, but I will talk about the flooding. I had couple apartments flood top to bottom, two-story building, and upper unit issue with the pipe. It overflowed over the bathtub, seeped into the floors, and I had a tenant call say it's raining. And that's never good to hear that it's raining inside of an apartment building. So called up all the plumbers, and it turns out everybody was booked and they were not willing to do a project of that size. And so I got to drive out there, which is 3 hours each way. So I drove out there, got it resolved, which took, it was about an 8 hour process. And it was.
So how did you get it resolved? Were you there just messing with the plumbing?
So there's an exterior drain that was flooding up, and it was putting sewer water into an apartment. The water stopped coming from the ceiling because I told them to stop using the water, and they shut it off. And we had to like go into the wall and close a couple things up. But whenever they would flush the toilets, water would come up, and it would go out of an exterior drain underneath the front door of the lower unit and into the apartment at that point. And that was kind of an issue for obvious health and safety reasons. So I got my electric cable snake, put it down there, and the snake broke. It hit something so hard, it just broke the snake. And so then I went to the store and I got one of those thick cables and started shoving it down. And 4 hours of shoving later, I mean, this was a half inch thick cable. It was pretty beefy. Started shoving it down the pipe, and after 4 hours of fighting it, it finally broke free. Probably wasn't by the books. I mean, I probably didn't do it the way I was supposed to, but I have no
probably
issues.
Probably the way they teach you. That's hilarious. Yeah, I mean, everyone always hears think about this podcast, right? The podcast is 21-year-old owning 30 rental units, right? Everyone hears the sexy side. Nobody wants to hear about the plumbing of the actual toilets on some of the rental properties that you own, right? So there's definitely good and bad for every outcome, no matter if you're in the real estate, no matter if you're in e-commerce, but that's a pretty wild story. All right. So Cody, the one thing I definitely want to go and take away from this is I feel like someone's going to go and turn on this podcast episode, listen to it, you know, over lunch, walking in the morning, whenever, and they're going to really want to go and get into real estate, right? That's our audience. It's people in their 20s, people who want to go and start businesses, get involved in real estate, do something interesting, adventurous, all that kind of stuff. And what I would love to have happen is them to leave with like three actionable takeaways, right? Because I think the part of this is like a mindset thing, right? And you've talked about that. You know, you said like you just had to go and be confident. You had to go and like you made a post in a Facebook group. You work at a real estate firm right now. Like there's part of it is the connections, being willing to go and put yourself out there and like have confidence that you can go and get the deal done. And I totally get that. But for someone who's still in that early stage where they're like, I want to do this, like, you know, there's a million directions to go. Which way do I go? Do you have maybe like three points that they can go and literally like end this podcast today or finish up the podcast and just go ahead and get started like right today?
Sure. I would say start out, write down what your actual goal is. Now, everybody says this, but nobody does it. I would say actually do it. Wherever you go, there you are, right? So if you want to start your path, like this is something I heard and I had to internalize it, but everybody's going to lie to you. So you can't lie to yourself. If you say you're going to write down your goals every day, do it. Because everybody's going to lie to you. If you're going to lie to yourself, there's no hope. So become accountable, right? So you're going to write down your goals. Number one, you need to be accountable to yourself. You can't lie to yourself. If you say you're going to go to the gym, do it. All right. If you just start winning by telling yourself the truth every single day, like if you tell the truth, you never have to remember what you said. So yeah. if you say you're going to do it, then do it. And if it's whether it's going to the gym, writing down your goals, working an extra 3 hours a day, cutting out the junk food or the TV, become accountable, because if you can't become accountable to yourself on little things, when you get into real estate and you have big problems, it's not going to go well, right? You need to build a foundation. And number three, I would read Dave Ramsey's Total Money Makeover to get your personal financial situation straight. Because if you can't handle personal finances, running a business, which is what this is going to be hard. And I guess one last point is give yourself grace. Because it's hard. It is really hard. And if you're trying to replicate somebody else, like if you go out and try and buy a 12-plex seller financed, odds are it's going to be tough. I didn't have anybody that I saw that did that. I just did it because it was there. Find the biggest deal in the best location that you can.
Why the biggest deal? Because I think a lot of people are going to like, for what it's worth, I agree with everything you just said, right? Have goals, be accountable, get your personal finances in order. Like you shouldn't go out there and try to start making money on real estate if you have college debt, or, you know, if you have, you're spending more than you're making every single month, you're just going to get into a bigger mess overall. But why go for the big thing right off the bat instead of a duplex, you know, like your original goal was, try to go and start learning, get the kinks out of the way on a smaller deal and then ramp up. Why go after the big one right away?
My thought process is you're going to do it either way. So you might as well start where you want to go. And whether you start with a duplex or you start with a fourplex, I've got two buddies I met in the last year. One of them bought a duplex. He just bought a second duplex. And his best friend, who's actually paying him rent right now, he's buying a fourplex. All right. The one guy started with two because he thought it'd be easier. And then the second guy started with four because I told him it would be easier, which it is, because he gets more cash flow. The more cash flow you have, the less risk you have. You can mitigate problems a lot easier. And the reason I love starting with 12, granted, it's not an everyday opportunity. It is an opportunity for a lot of people once they start immersing themselves in the content and start learning and making, like, being intentional with what they're doing. The 12-plex cash flow is more than any duplex could if they had the same amount of debt. The income is just so much higher. And Because of that, I can mitigate a lot more risk because I've got pretty significant cash flow from the properties to where I can throw it at the money that I raise. Like, I've got debt payments every month, right? I've got over $2 million in debt right now. And I can pay all those. I can pay all the taxes, even though Washington State decided to just double my taxes for the properties. I can pay for the insurance, utilities, maintenance, management. And after all that, I've got a lump of money that I can throw at extra problems, because there will be extra problems.
And right. So,
you can't do that on a single family house.
To your point, the bigger properties theoretically should increase the margin of error, right? So that way, in the event the plumbing goes out, or, you know, God forbid anything happens to one of your units, right? Like you kind of have a little bit of an extra wiggle room to play with. Whereas the plumbing goes out on the duplex, great, that just took out the profit for the year, right? So it kind of gives you a little bit of an extra space to play with, right?
Yeah. And some people love single family and duplexes, and like, that's awesome. I've got buddies who own a lot of, like, I've met them and they own a lot of duplexes and a lot of single families. But that's not where they started. And I looked at where they started, and they started with sixplexes, and then they bought 12s, and they started with fourplexes, and they went big, and then they scaled back and bought some single families to get some diversity. It's a different tenant base. But that's not where they started, because the risk was too high. And so I learned this in Florida when I talked with Grants, and he just told me, look what I did, not what I said. Look what people are doing. What Grant is doing now is not what he did to get there. Same with Dave Ramsey. So that is what I'm trying to share with folks, is that look what people did, not what they're saying, because typically what they're saying is trying to get them to the next level. It's not what got them there. And if you're trying to do 10 steps ahead, you're going to have different results, and that'll slow people down.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite quotes I just heard last week. Have you ever read the book Atomic Habits?
Nope.
Nope. Okay. Great book. Anyone listening? It's basically, I mean, you talk about goals, accountability, all that kind of stuff all the time. Like, this is like the, in my opinion, one of the best self-help books out there. But it basically just talks about how anything big that you want to go and do starts with small individual contributions and like the best way to form habits and all that kind of stuff, yada, yada. But the author, James Clear, just tweeted the other week, was saying that if you want to go and get good at anything, I don't care if it's, you know, boxing, chess, business, dog training, whatever you want to do, right? Whatever you're trying to go and get better at, study the people who are 2 years ahead of you, not 20 years ahead of you, right? So like everyone's going to want to go and study like Floyd Mayweather if they want to go and become an incredible boxer. But the real person you should be studying, and God, this is actually a terrible example. It's the only one that can come to the top of my mind right now, though, is like the Jake Paul, right? The YouTuber that just fought Ben Askren last week. It's a bad example, but like he's 2 years into his boxing career. He is probably working on more fundamental techniques and combinations than someone at Floyd Mayweather's level who is, you know, has muscle memory, has done, you know, over 50 professional fights, all that kind of stuff. So I think to your point, with someone like real estate, with Grant Cardone, Dave Ramsey, whoever, looking at someone who could be the next Dave Ramsey or Grant Cardone, and is actually 2 years ahead of you right now, is probably a better person to go and study than some of the bigger guys.
And I think specifically in the real estate world, right? It's different if you're trying to scale from, you know, 50,000 apartments to 100,000 apartments rather than, you know, 5 to 10, right? It's an entirely different ball game. And so talking to people that are in a similar position, yeah, I think that's wonderful advice. Do you think it's more important for someone to spend the next couple of years trying to save up money for a down payment in their current job versus, you know, getting a job in the real estate world as maybe a broker or a realtor or trying to hook up with an investment fund, or to just not really care about their current situation and hustle as much as they can to, you know, convince someone to give them a down payment and just put everything together and it's just trial and error from the beginning?
Depends. What do they want to do? Right? Comes back to their why. Like, why are they doing it? What do they want? I wouldn't encourage most people to become a real estate broker. Broke is in the name. Most people are broke in this business. And I'm on Facebook. Like, I was on Facebook earlier today. I was talking to this guy and he's like, don't worry about what you make. Just worry about doing the job and the money will follow. That doesn't really resonate with me because it's like the things that I neglect, like I don't push focus to, I'm going to have issues with. And yet it comes back to that being intentional. Most real estate agents think that way, though. They're like, if you just do the work, money will follow and you'll be okay. And that is the premise of the real estate business. And so jumping in, if you're going to do it, be intentional about it and learn a space. Mine's multifamily. There's a lot of people like Chris Krohn. He's made a ton of money off of single family. Like these, I'm just throwing out names for some folks that I looked up to when I was starting getting different advice from. But you need to be intentional. Like if you're going to be an agent, what are you going to learn about? Are you going to learn about lease options? Are you going to learn about seller financing? Are you going to learn about just leasing? Like how do you do the lease up process? Maybe you work. You get your license and you work with a property management company so that you learn that aspect of the business so that when you get apartments, you can manage it in the beginning and then you can manage your managers once you get higher up. And so it depends what someone wants to do, but if someone's making 50, 60, 100 grand a year or more, just bank cash. Put as much cash as you can in the bank. Use your 3.5% down FHA, use your VA loan if you've got it. Low down conventional, go buy a building. You could do FHA on a fourplex. You can do VA on a fourplex. Go buy a building, live in it for a year, live next to free, if not cash flowing in the first year. And then when you move out, you've got a cash flowing asset. You take all that money and you can go buy the next one and you buy the next one. And then when you have high enough income, you just let your tenants, who are really nice people, pay it all off for you. And it's legacy wealth.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when you, the tough part, the toughest part, in my opinion, about real estate is that when you say it like that, it sounds so goddamn easy. And then you go and actually start diving into the deals and negotiating it all. And it actually, like, it seems like it becomes a little bit more complex. And I guess, you know, at the end of the day, it's a simple numbers game, right? Like you said at the beginning of the call, like, the cash coming in needs to go and exceed the cash coming out to go and make any deal profitable. one of the things that I've noticed, especially this year, because interest rates are so low, people are still making money despite the fact that we're, you know, we've been in a pandemic for, I guess, 13 months at this point, hopefully coming out soon. But the market, everyone's talking about it right now. The market's incredibly hot right now. It's tough to find deals no matter the asset class. And you're seeing certain properties, you know, depending on the asset class, like multifamilies right now in a lot of cities are 2x the price they were just a couple of years ago. Are you at this point right now where you're kind of waiting to sit back with maybe a little bit of extra cash and wait for a market correction? Or are you still in the deal hunting mode where you're trying to go out and find new properties to acquire right now?
I don't keep a lot of cash in the bank. I'm buying a flip property from a family member or someone in the office. I'm trying to help out their family situation. They're kind of in a tough spot. And so I decided to pick it up, but I'm buying a flip to generate cash. But then I'm going to take that cash and probably just going to pay off some debt. I am really happy with my portfolio and I don't need to add extra what ifs to the equation right now, especially with where the market's at. And so I just start hammering my mortgages and I did the math and I could probably pay off my smallest building. I could pay off the sixplex in about 3.5 years out of the cash flow and some additional income. And so I pay that off. And now that's a foundation because I've got no mortgage there. And that'll allow me to scale quicker. So I'm a little bit holding back right now. But if I found the right deal, I've got a buddy who owns a 16 unit over in Central Washington. And I've called him up so many times and I just said, hey, when you're ready to sell, I'm your guy. I know you're not interested, but you will be someday. And that's kind of how I've been hammering it. If he called me up today and said, I'll sell it to you, I would buy it tomorrow.
Right. And it sounds like everyone I've talked to in the real estate space, that's hands down the way to go about it, is that at the end of the day, this guy knows now that if he ever wants to go and sell his property, he's coming to you first. And the relationships are definitely a key piece there to getting ahead in the business and finding the deals that never even make it on the market because they're, you know, getting signed by you the next day.
Yeah. And one more tip that kind of made me think about something. Take responsibility for everything. Because when people say they're not interested, to me, that's my fault because I haven't given them any information to make them interested. If I told them everything, they would sign the deal, right? If they don't have time for it right now, it's like, that's my fault. Because if I told them something they wanted to hear, they'd make time. And so one last tip. It's just take responsibility. That's my fault, not theirs.
That's good.
So, and, yeah.
It sounds like Cody's kind of four rules for life: set goals, be accountable, take responsibility, and get your finances in order. Otherwise, you should never be getting into real estate or business in the first place. Anything else to add on that one?
It's good.
No, that's a solid four rules. Cody, you've been awesome to talk to today, man. I'm almost more interested for a potential second episode, you know, a year or two down the line when you're 23, Jesus Christ, just to see how many properties and how many units you have under your belt at that point. Anywhere that people can go and find you, whether it's social, reaching out to you over email or website or anything like that, to go and get in touch and kind of learn more about you.
My Instagram is CodyD2020.
Cool.
And if you guys want to reach out there, I will connect with you on socials.
Awesome, Cody. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, man.
Thanks.
Thanks, Cody.